Research shows that only 10% of us listen effectively. Think about it. We're so distracted by the cacophony of dings and tweets from our smartphones, not to mention what's going on inside your head. In other words, we are not listening. If we're not distracted by technology, our own thoughts can keep us from listening to another person. And we often think we're listening, but what are we doing? We're waiting to jump in. Well, Nancy Schnobelin-Ims from Polished is here at your request on our text line to help. Nancy, welcome to the studio. Good to see you again.
It's great to see you too, Jennifer and Wendy. Thank you for
having me.
So
nice to meet you.
Yes.
So communication is really at the heart of everything we do, but we're not doing it well enough, are we?
Well, as you said, Jennifer, it's not all about communicating. It's also about listening, really, really listening. And there are these buzzwords today that everybody wants to throw out there: active listening, conscious listening, co-listening, empathy, empathetic listening. But at the end of the day, it's being mindful. It's taking away all the distractions and being in the moment and having that communication, that back and forth. And people get confused. You know, listening, it's not so much hearing, right? If that's part of it. The message goes through our ear canal, passes through our brain and gives us that message. But it's being in the present, taking away all distractions and having that conversation. And when you do that effectively, golly, things change. You have an agreement. You have a better understanding. Work is more productive. Relationships are healthier. It's just people don't understand that it's not that difficult. But again, as you mentioned, technology and the distractions of life, we become less listen. We don't listen as much.
Well, and we've seen it. I mean, and we've discussed it off the air, on the air, the fact that we are afraid that we have been completely rewired. And that because what has it been like now, 10, 20 years since we've had these devices? And you see the generations and how the younger kids are being impacted by it. We're being impacted by it. So that's why this visit is really important today. As much as it seems like there's no way around it, you're saying there actually is.
Yes. I mean, just like any skill, listening is a skill and it can be learned. But you have to make it a practice and do that on a daily basis to become an effective listener. So, for example, I love what you said, Wendy, about how we have our smartphones at our hip or our hand 24/7. Even before we go to bed at night, we tend to check it, and it's our alarm clock. And so when we're in the moment and when we can put that away, again, things become more clear. Our relationships become stronger. Things become more defined. And I love this saying by Stephen Covey, you know, the author, the famed educator on seven habits of highly effective people. He said, most people don't listen to understand. Most people listen to reply.
Mm-hmm.
We're all guilty of that, right? How many times have we been among girlfriends and they're talking and we want to share our thoughts without fully listening to their story? Or we're in a meeting and everybody's adding their two cents, but are we really listening, or do we just want to be that contributor, just to be that contributor?
Well, and Nancy, when you say this about Stephen Covey and the habits of highly effective people, mm-hmm. I have often thought, whether you talk about a Bill Clinton and Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos, Don Juan, I think they're all good listeners. They're able to focus in on the person, stay present, and make that person in their force field feel like they are the only person on the face of the earth.
That, ding, 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 you win the listening award. That is what it is. It's being in the moment, showing the eye contact, the nodding. You know, our body language also is a way in which we can listen and show that we are in the present, that we're, you know, we're listening to their every word. And yet, as you said, most people, I love to throw out some statistics just because it's so real. We, as human beings, really only capture between 25 and 50% of what is being said. So having to be focused, like you were saying, Jennifer, is a very important skill set.
When you talk about having to be focused, here's an example of what I think makes so many women mad. They're sitting there talking with their spouse or boyfriend or significant other or partner. And suddenly, a good-looking woman walks by, and all of a sudden, they have a wandering eye. Now, this could also be a squirrel or a child being distracted. So Do you have any tips, Nancy, for how people can stay present and not get distracted? I know there must be a time limit on what we're capable of.
Yes. I mean, we are human, right?
Yes.
To err is to be human. Look, I have been in that same boat where perhaps I'm at a networking event or a cocktail party or wherever, and all of a sudden I'm talking to this person and he or she, like you said, eyes are averting or maybe they're checking their watch. So body language is so critically important as the receiver and the giver of that conversation. So you can politely say, oh, gosh, it looks like you might have, you know, another meeting coming up or you're waiting for somebody to chat with, other than that, in a polite but assertive way. And then that only not gives you value for yourself and the respect, because honestly, as we said, communication is all about respect, listening and speaking. But it also makes that other person aware, hey, you know what? That was rude. I really should be more in the moment here with this person and show that respect and that interest and appreciation, having the opportunity to have the conversation.
Well, let's give some tips to people, because we did bring you back at the request of our listeners who said there were a couple of people who said, I'm in my 60s or I'm in my 70s, and I would really like to learn how to be a good listener. So at least there's insight there, mm-hmm. and we all should have this insight because we all could listen better most of the time. So let's go over a list of tips that would help all of us.
Sure. Well, as I said in the beginning, it's just trying to take all your worries away and be in the moment, right? This person has something to say, especially if you're at work or having a personal conflict with a relative. You really want to be in the moment. And the second thing is, don't interrupt. Let that person finish his or her message. Often, as human beings, we want to chime in and add our 2 cents, but then we're going to convolute the message, or we're going to lose track of what they were saying, or they're going to lose their thought. Let them finish. And interrupting is a skill, right? Because we all like to listen to ourselves, but let's let them finish their message. So those are two very important things. And then, as I mentioned too, Jennifer, is being able to leverage your body language so it's syncing correctly with your verbal messages. So, for example, like you and I are looking at each other right
now. Eye contact, right.
I can see that you're really engaged in my conversation. Nodding is also important. And this is one thing that I do want to say too, especially in the older generation, which I consider myself in that population.
Me too.
Is empathetic, being empathetic. Sometimes all somebody wants to say is to talk so you can listen. We have a lot of noise in our world today, and sometimes we don't take the time to really listen to that other person. We don't have to necessarily agree with what they're saying. Okay, no judging here. Never no judging. But listening and trying to understand from their point of view is a win-win.
I don't see a lot of it.
No, and I think sometimes it's really important, as you said, just to validate, just to let the person talk without feeling the need to solve the problem in the moment, because that was something I've always struggled with at visitations. I felt like I had to say the most perfect thing in the world to provide all the comfort, or I felt like a real failure. And I now know at an older age that just to have that touch of the hand, that hand on the shoulder, just to have somebody be there and know what you're going through is better than anything that they could say.
Exactly. That's an excellent way of being an empathetic listener. Sometimes those pauses, we don't have to fill the air with words so much. It's just being, like you said, Wendy, it's just being there, maybe touching their shoulder or just nodding and letting them talk or not.
Well, and here's a question on our John Beale text line. Nancy, what about people who will not stop talking? They just go over their point over and over again, and it seems as though they will continue to talk unless I, the listener, say something. That is kind of a tough situation.
It is, and we've all been around people who really are jabbers, right?
They don't take any social cues.
Right. Their self-awareness maybe isn't as fine-tuned, and so we always want to be utmost respect. We want to treat others like we want to be treated. So we don't want to single them out or make them feel uncomfortable. But you can, if you know that person has a tendency to be very long-winded and not let you share, you can just say, you know what? Let's make this a two-way conversation from the get-go. You just say it in an assertive, polite, respectful way. I want you to share your point, and then you stop and let me share my point. So when you say that, it's almost like instructions when you're playing a game or learning how to play a game. You have to spell it out, right? And when they hear you say that, then it's almost like, okay, ding, ding, ding again. I'm needing to adhere to what this person is saying. So
when I was a therapist 20 years ago for a short period of time, there was an exercise that we often had married couples do, which was to go home and for 2 minutes, maybe 1 minute, sit there with your spouse and just listen. Honestly, it was difficult for people to do it for 1 minute, but the rewards were great once they learned. 1 minute we're talking about.
And that can be an eternity, especially if the couple's not getting along. But Jennifer, I love that because, again, we're human beings. We love to talk. We want to be around people. We want to share. But it's a two-way street. And letting people have their say and then listening and then conveying that message is critical.
We are chatting with Nancy Schnobel and Ims of Polished about listening. That's the missing half of communication necessary but often overlooked.
And the John Beale text line, as Jennifer said, 84126. So keep those great questions and insights coming for Nancy. I wanted to ask you about silence. And what is it about silence that we're so afraid of? And maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I panic when it's silent. And I don't know if that's because of my talk radio background. But, you know, Jack Buck made the broadcast even more meaningful and special by letting the ballpark speak for itself, that ambient noise. He didn't feel the need to speak every second. But conversationally, Nancy, why is it so terrifying for us?
That's a great question, Wendy. I love to say, you know, I'm going to throw out some cliches here. Silence is golden. And when we practice it, just like you were saying with Jack Buck, it adds more impact. It adds more thoughtfulness to what you're saying. We're quick to react. We're quick to, share our message. But when we really take a moment after listening to think about how we want to say it, that's where a powerful pause could come in. It shows respect. It shows thoughtfulness. And on the flip side, and I had a boss years ago who he took pauses to the point where I was twiddling my fingers thinking, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. What's going on here? But he was trying to gather his thoughts in a productive, fluid, coherent way. And so pauses can be powerful. Don't be afraid of them. Most people don't realize that as you practice your public speaking skills, do more pausing. It adds, especially when you're storytelling, right? Or you want to add a statistic or something. It has an impact. And I think even too with listening and communicating, pauses can be powerful in that you're showing, I respect you and I'm going to give this a little bit more time before I reply, but I am going to reply. I just want to take it all in for a second. So yeah, pauses can be tricky because you feel like the other person is nervous or you're getting flustered because you're not reacting right away, but it shows confidence, it shows poise and respect.
Nancy, let's talk a little bit about reflective listening. I remember years ago, there was a TV consultant who came in and we were sitting around the editorial table. And I knew immediately this man had taken a class in active listening and reflective listening because he would do this reflective listening. And it made everybody sit up and think to themselves, I can't believe he actually heard what I just said. So could you kind of define that?
Oh, great. And I'm really going to tip my listening hat off to you, Jennifer. Well, good for you. Yes, reflective listening, another little buzzword, but that means trying to fully understand. So they'll repeat what that person said just to ensure that they received the message correctly. So they'll say something like, so what I'm hearing you say, Jennifer, is you enjoy, you know, going out to dinner and having a really great time with friends, but you don't want to stay past 10 o'clock, right? Because you've got to get up early in the morning, or maybe it's 9 o'clock, whatever that message is. So when you do that reflecting, it closes the loop. That person will say, no, what I meant, or that is it. That's exactly it. So that's a great skill. And it's also very powerful too when you're in a high stressful situation. So let me just understand you correctly, Wendy. you want me to get this done by 5 o'clock so we can put this aside and focus on the show in the morning. Is that right?
And give me all your money.
And give you, well, I'm leaving. But it's true. It's that. It's reflective listening, active listening. These are all little keys, ingredients to being that gold standard listener.
Listen to this from the 217. Nancy, I do listen to my wife, and I stay silent until she is done, but then she gets mad and asks, are you listening? Maybe this person needs to reflect back what he or she has heard.
Yes, and here's that. I've been there with you, Liz. I've been there with the person who texted that question. And maybe you have to show empathy, right? She says, okay, I understand that. The wife is yelling at him and he's pausing and she's like, you're not listening to me. And then that he could come back and say, you know what? I am listening, but I really want to pick my words right because I hear that you're upset. I'm wanting to understand more what it is I could do to prevent this from happening again. And so when you show that kind of that respect and that reassurance that you want to make this correct, then that person will hopefully back down a bit and show that exchange of agreement.
We're chatting with Nancy Schnobelin-Ims of Polished about listening.
And she just made such an important point for all of us, but specifically, I think, for women. This has been my experience. When I'm talking to my husband, sometimes I forget that men are not as comfortably verbal as we are, and as you said so beautifully, they are processing their response. That doesn't mean that they're not listening. That doesn't mean that. That just means that they are not. I mean, I'm sure that there are exceptions, most of all in the courtroom, but they are simply socially not as verbal as we are. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we almost have to remind ourselves on an hourly basis, whether you're in the work, you know, in the professional world or the personal world.
There's no doubt, Wendy. And really, we have to be mindful of people's personalities, too. Not everybody is very talkative or outgoing. I mean, it's those reserved people. They have something important to say, too. And it may not be in our nature for having them pause and think about it, but it's just as valuable. And so understanding different personality styles is critical, especially in the workplace, because I have seen more relationships derail because this person is a left brain and this person is an emotional person. And then when they two talk, they don't wear each other's hats. And so you can see how there's like divisive results because they're not saying, okay, this person wants, he's left brain, he wants logic, he wants data, stats. I've got to be mindful that he doesn't want to hear me screaming and being real, you know, theatrical. And so you just have to be, you know, kind of almost a therapist in a way to have that conversation and respect that other person's way of speaking or
living.
Living, exactly.
During the break, we were talking about children. And one of the first things we learn as interviewers, which is all about listening, is to ask a child open-ended questions. Because if you're interviewing a young child or maybe even a tween, if you ask a yes-no question, you'll get a yes or a no. But open-ended questioning is a skill we could all learn to use in our daily lives to become more effective listeners, isn't it?
That is correct, Jennifer. In fact, we need to use it more because it helps, again, clarify and erase any miscommunication. So, for example, you'll say, Jennifer, instead of having those closed-ended, like, do you like to work late at night? Yes or no? But
no.
Tell me why you don't like to work late at night. So they've got to come up. And that is a very good way when Jennifer will say, well, Nancy, you don't realize I have to be up at the, you know, early bird morning here and I need my sleep or whatever it is. And then I'll say, ah, that's right. Well, tell me more about that. Why, what's so important about you have to get up at this hour, especially when you're trying to get to know somebody? These open-ended questions can really fuse a good rapport and relationship.
So we can pivot. I I mean, we can just get comfortable with maybe pivoting.
It's a good conversation, right?
Right.
It's building and developing relationships. And when you do that, that's how we grow in our communication skills and our listening skills, by using those open-ended, even probing. Tell me more, especially if a person is upset, like your spouse or boyfriend's like, you never listen to me. I told you this yesterday. You know, I've asked you 100 times to take the garbage out in the morning. You know that's important to me, but you never do it. And he'll say, Nancy, I will get to it. I'm not, but, you know, not respecting that person. And next time, Joe, say, Nancy, I know that's important to you. You have my word. I will get it out by 11 o'clock. So, you know, there's going to be that grace period. You want it out by 9, but I will get it out before the, you know, waste management people come. Again, it's just connecting, you know, closing the loop and having that that resolution between the both of you.
I want to ask you the difference between a probing question and an intrusive one, because in life, when there's no microphone here, I'm more hesitant to ask questions that I have in my head, but I don't want to be intrusive.
That's because you have very good emotional intelligence, Jennifer. Right?
Thank you.
And self-awareness, knowing who we're speaking to, knowing that personality. You know, some people are an open book and they'll share, you know, very private things. But if you're doing an interview or you're trying to get to know somebody, especially in the beginning, you want to avoid topics that can kind of detour and make that person feel upset or angered. So things like health, you know, you want to be respectful or talking about one's money, or did you get the bonus like I did, and or whatever. I mean, we just want to be sensitive. Things about religion and today politics. Again, as I said earlier, we don't necessarily have to agree. We just have to understand their point of view, and when we do, and no judging. And when we can do that, you know, I understand why, you know, you voted for this amendment and I chose not to, but I appreciate you laying out the reasons why you felt it was important. These are the reasons why I disagree, you know, and to agree to disagree is life, and you have to be respectful of that.
I love the, could you talk about positive body language? If you haven't already, I did have to step out for a moment.
We have not covered that.
Okay, that is so important, because if you have ever had a conversation with somebody who has their arms crossed like Jennifer just did, or who, you know, they're almost like doing, like they're giving you the wrap up sign when they talk to you. It's like,
I know,
there's nothing
like,
worse
hello.
Than that. So what is positive body language for our listeners?
First of all, eye contact is huge, and smiling. And I will throw out this little soft skill piece of trivia here. When you look at somebody and you're giving them that eye contact and you're smiling, it will automatically boost your confidence and it will make the recipient feel respected. And so you fake it till you make it. Maybe you're not so into it, but if you're just smiling and nodding, they'll feel like they're being listened to or heard. And so those are two key things. Now, obviously, if the conversation is, you know, serious or has a point where you're not wanting to smile, you're going to obviously use your good judgment. But using your body language with your hands too, open-ended palms and smiling while you're talking, nodding when you're doing that, it shows more engagement. Hey, I understand what you're saying. I'm here with you. I get it. I'm right there on your team. I'm with you all the way. So it's silly things like that. I shouldn't say silly. It's not silly. It's actually quite impactful when you show yourself out there, right? You're using those nonverbals to articulate what you're saying, leveraging your oral communication and making it more effective.
Can we go over again, rephrasing what you have just heard? And I think this can help on so many levels, whether you're talking about a romantic relationship and an important conversation, or the workplace, or a parent-child.
Yes, and that's just like the reflective listening, as you said, summarizing something up. So what I just heard you say is you're not interested in doing dinners every night at home because you come home, you're tired from work, or you've had a long day with the kids. I understand that. But let me just get this correct. You're prepared to cook home-cooked meals Monday through Wednesday. Is that right? And then that will person say, yes, I'm prepared to do Monday to Wednesday. But that's not to say I won't cook on Monday or Thursday, whatever the days are. I just don't want to have to be really cooking. Maybe I'm pulling together sandwiches or, you know. So it's having that summary so both ends can nod and say yes or say, wait a second, I think I need to clarify this a little bit more. I didn't mean it that so strictly. I just want 3 days a week where I can just shut down, right? And so just getting that summarized element into, especially when you're having a heavy-duty discussion, because we've all been there. It gets heated, and we say things, and then, oh, my gosh, we're taking two steps backwards instead of getting closer to the resolution. And things spiral out of control, and before you know it, this person's going that way, and that person's going that way, and you've just, you know, you can make more damage.
Interrupting is something, and it almost seems, do we need to take a break?
No, we don't.
Okay. It almost seems like something that like a conversation that we should have within the broadcasting world and then outside the broadcasting world. Because if I nickel for every time I heard people say that on Donnybrook, for example, why do you interrupt each other? And the thinking behind it has always been that is actually the way people argue around the dinner table. They don't wait for you to put the punctuation on.
True.
At least many families do not. And so, I mean, I would be very wealthy if I had a nickel for every time somebody said, you guys have to stop interrupting anybody or each other. And because in a radio context, if you stop and then I wait for you to stop or you wait for me to stop, that can be referred to as plotting. I mean, truly, people want to listen to, I think, an upbeat, energetic exchange of ideas and feelings and that kind of thing. But in the boardroom, it's quite a different world.
Right.
So you almost have to win in Rome, or do you, Nancy?
No, I think that's true. I mean, listen, we've all been around people. Like I always like to say, when you get a bunch of women together, we got to add our two cents. and oftentimes the message is never completed because we're adding this and that. But recently, when we had friends over or family over for the holidays, I had a relative. He got a little bit, you know, miffed because he felt like I was one-upping him, but I wasn't. And I said something about, oh, he went to China and Beijing. And I'm like, well, I had the experience of going to Dubai. And I think he felt a little bit, you know, put off by that. And so he got up and left the room. Now, to me, I felt very offended and hurt, but it also made me think, well, did I interrupt him? Did I not let him finish? So, you know, there's times when we have to really be hard on ourselves, too, because you don't mean to interrupt. And I hear what you're saying in this type of situation. You're engaging. You're trying to but if it's an argument and you're interrupting each other, nothing's going to get resolved.
A question on the John Beal text line. Nancy, what do you do with someone who consistently cuts off your point and does this, interrupts you all the time while you're trying to make a point?
There is nothing wrong after a while when it becomes a pattern for you to say, stop. You know, show your assertiveness. Be respectful, though, always having that respect. Please let me finish. You will have a turn to share your point of view, but stop. It's my turn to talk. You know, at some point you have to, right? If it's becoming like a face off with words, you just have to say, and that's where your body language can come in. You know, the eyes, using your hands, and just look. I hear you, but it's let me talk for a minute, and then it's your turn. You know, sometimes people get timers out too, and if they're in a heated discussion, okay, then it's my turn to talk. It's a good, especially for kids too. Kids have to learn how to listen. Especially we talked about earlier with technology, they're half the time they're on their phones or they're messaging when they're talking. And, you know, listening is critical. People can lose their jobs or relationships over it.
Jennifer and Wendy here with Nancy Schnoble and Ims of Polished, talking about improving our listening skills, which is something I think we all need to do. From the John Beal text line, Nancy, Mike from accounting, who is kind of like part of our show, and we love this when people text in regularly. He says, Nancy, when somebody, usually family, interrupts me when I'm speaking, I stop talking and hold my pose. It's a touch dramatic, but that person is a habitual interrupter, and they quickly get the message. Mike, he's come to this.
Mike, well, first of all, Mike, thanks for taking the time to share. It's true. Sometimes you have to do something dramatic like that for them to understand that, you know what, that was disrespectful. I'm here. It's a two-way, you know, conversations are two-way. It's not just that person talking. It's listening. And so what I love about some organizations, and they do, you know, we've got such great companies here in town, they create safe space within the organization for them to be able to talk and say something with everybody listening. And then that person can, so sometimes it's just a matter of saying at a family gathering, guys, let's be respectful for every family member. Let them have their messages, and we'll try not to interrupt. I know it's hard, but let's let everybody share, and then let's engage in this very vibrant topic of a conversation.
You know, years ago, my mother gave me the dining room furniture that belonged to my grandmother. She lived in Florida. I lived here. And from that moment on, every time I talked to my mother, she complained about it. I missed that dining room furniture. I missed that dining room furniture. And I kept jumping in and trying to problem solve, saying, I'll send it back. I'll do this. I went to see a therapist. And the therapist suggested, why don't you chat with your mother and say, I hear that you miss it. Remember this great party we had with that furniture at your house? And then talk about a party that you had. But, you know, sort of validate what she's saying. It's not just the furniture, it's what it stood for. And it solved, you know, instead of me trying to solve the person, my mother felt listened to, and it solved the problem.
Absolutely. And that's good empathy, right? It's I think empathy should be everybody's top leadership skill. Because when you have empathy, let's throw self-awareness in there too, you're golden. I mean, you're able to listen because you're empathetic. I hear what you're saying, and I'm so sorry. I can't imagine the pain you're going through. I'm here for you. Please, no, I'm here for you. And then pause.
And I think just sometimes the fact, even if you are questioning and sort of summarizing and making sure that you're getting the message correctly, just the even if you didn't get the message correctly, the fact that you are trying to get the message is so huge to the person that you're speaking to. Just that attempt means the world to somebody.
Exactly. It makes a connection. We all want to be connected. We're humans. We love to be. We're social, right? We want to be around people. But being mindful, exactly what you said, is just, I'm here for you. Period. The end. Just. And then they can talk about it if they want. Some people, you know, whether they lost a baby or they're grieving over a death or whatever, we want to, like you said earlier, fill in the noise and talk about things. They may not want to by saying, I'm here. I'm so sorry for what you're going through, but I'm here for you.
On this note, we have this text, and I think this will be our last one. Nancy, I lost my mom a month ago and would be spending this holiday alone. Many friends extended invitations to spend time with them. I would say thank you so much, but didn't commit because I just didn't want to intrude. I had a few people become upset that I didn't come right out and say yes or no right at the time. How could I have handled that better?
Oh, well, first of all, my deepest sympathy for you. I know losing a parent is not an easy process to the grieving process can go on. Now, we want to help. Humans are kind by nature, right? We want to give. Simply by saying, oh, you are so kind, but you've got a big family. I don't want to be, you know, one more person that you have to clean after or feed. That person will say, are you kidding me? You're the treat of the day. You need to come to our house. You fill us with joy. That's what they want. We all want to help each other. And as much as we are stuck in our little cocoon and we're grieving and we don't want to bother anybody or we want to be left alone, push yourself outside that box. You can do that.
But is it rude to say, I really need to be alone right now?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Just be direct.
I love that. Honesty. I hope you can understand. I just need time with me.
But I'll never forget that you made this offer during this time.
Yeah. But let's do it maybe. Let's check back after the new year. Yeah.
And then sometimes good listening would be, gosh, that must be awful. Or, gosh, I hear what you're going through. And as Wendy said, we'll be here next year.
Simple as that.
We are coming up on the top of the hour. Nancy Schnobelin-Ims is with Polished. And your website?
My website is www.stlpolished.com. Jennifer and Wendy, may I give a shout out to my grandchildren?
Because
yes, I told them that I would.
Yes,
they have
you
to
must.
Be so proud. Oh, Claire, my little love bug. Claire, Logan, Coral, Brooks, Henry, Finn. And Gray, I love you, and I will see you soon.
I love all their names.
And she was doing all of the gesturing.
Yes,
so you
my
know
hugging,
it's true.
My snuggling.
And we've heard that you're
so
great
much.
Kids. Thank you, Nancy. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you, Wendy, both
Thank
of you.
You.